If the world feels louder, faster, angrier, lonelier, and more divided than you remember, it's not just you. Institutions are fraying. Attention spans are shrinking. Change is accelerating faster than we know how to respond. The sheer volume of information we absorb each day exceeds our ability to process or make meaning of it, leaving us anxious, distracted, and depleted. You'd think all that information and connection would lead to deeper understanding and more meaningful relationships. Instead, we curate which voices we want to hear and filter out those we don't, creating echo chambers that fuel an increasingly polarized and tribal world. And just beneath the surface, there's a collective unease we can't quite shake. We've lived through a global pandemic that forced millions of people to rearrange how they live, work, and connect almost overnight. We've endured waves of economic instability, the heartbreak of school shootings, and a widespread decline in mental health that touches nearly every family. These disruptions haven't just made life harder, they've made it harder to trust, to rest, to feel safe. Perhaps not surprisingly, in May 2023, then U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy declared loneliness and isolation a public health crisis. It's no wonder so many of us feel untethered. The center, the place of meaning, belonging, truth, feels blurred, contested, weaponized, or forgotten. We sense it in our relationships, our institutions, even in our own hearts. Something is falling apart. More than a century ago, in the aftermath of World War I, poet William Butler Yeats wrote words that land with startling relevance today. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. We're not simply exhausted. We're unmoored. And the world isn't the only thing that's changing. So is our faith, at least the way we practice it. You've seen the stats. People are walking away from the church in droves. Not out of rebellion, but out of disillusionment, fatigue, and a deep hunger for something more. But beneath all the cynicism, there's still a longing, a hunger for something ancient and rooted, something true. For many, the forms of faith we inherited can't sustain the weight of the life we're facing. So, quietly, desperately, we search for a way to begin again. In a world this disoriented, we're not just looking for relief. We're looking for a way to live, a rhythm, a framework, a path that's ancient enough to trust and practical enough to walk. That's exactly what Jesus offered when he gave his disciples and us the Lord's Prayer. It's the most well-known prayer in human history. You'll hear it recited in churches, hospitals, military barracks, and locker rooms. Most people, whether they're religious or not, are familiar with it. But for Jesus' first followers, it was significantly more than just a prayer. It was a blueprint for daily life, shaping their identity and guiding how they lived. As theologians William Willimon and Stanley Hauerwas wrote, the church traditionally instructed new Christians by teaching them this prayer. So if you are asked, who is a Christian? The best answer you can give is someone who has learned to pray the Lord's Prayer. This wasn't about performing a memorization exercise. It was about reordering their lives around the heartbeat of heaven. Likewise, Jesus doesn't mean for us simply to recite the prayer. He means for us to live it. In Jesus' day, when a rabbi or sage gave their disciples a specific prayer, it was seen as an invitation to take part in God's work. Prayer wasn't passive, it was collaborative. The disciples understood they had a role to play in bringing that prayer to fruition. The same is true with the Lord's Prayer. Every line was a call to align their lives with what God was doing in the world. And it wasn't just something Jesus taught his disciples to pray. It was the very prayer he was living out in his own life. When you grasp its depth and breadth, you'll see why.